come on, man. We need to work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. However you want to talk to us, join us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Joined by Jeff Eagles, I am John Schmelk. And we'll talk a lot of Super Bowl folks today. And we're going to be joined by two guests from out in San Francisco, Jeff. Two people we know very well, Michael Eisen and Anita Marks. Yeah. We'll talk about everything surrounding the game in terms of the Giants, but also the game itself. And who better than to lead off our show than the senior writer and editor for Giants.com. I think I got both his titles, right? And that's the great Michael Eisen, who's a frequent guest of the show. Michael, how are you, pal? It's good to talk to you.
Hi, Mike.
Phone pot, Dan. Phone pot. Number five or six.
Bringing back Dan, who's getting a little bit comfortable with this.
Mike, you're with us there. Now we can hear you, I think.
Yeah, you guys faded in and out a little bit there.
All right, now we got you, pal. Can you hear us now?
I can hear you now, yes.
Perfect. Well, first of all, you've done fantastic work out there in San Francisco, and it sounds like you're on the bus on the way to the media center, I'm guessing. Just, you know, what has it been like, and a lot of Giant stories out there this year, too?
It's been a lot of bus rides. The media center is up in San Francisco, and the teams are staying in Santa Clara and San Jose, which is about 50 miles away.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's been a Super Bowl with a lot of bus rides, which is why I prefer the Super Bowls to be in New Orleans, where you can walk everywhere.
Wow. 50.
But there have been a lot of Giants connections. It's great. It was great to see Dave Gettleman, obviously our former pro personnel director, who's now the general manager of the Panthers. Eli has been at a couple of events. We have another Eli event, Man of the Year press conference in about an hour. We saw Rashad Jennings yesterday. Archie Manning is here. He's talking about Eli. And I believe he has another son who's here this week. So been a lot going on here.
Yeah, no question. And, Mike, Jeff and I have been kind of going through your stories today, and it's really just, you know, great, great stuff. I encourage everybody to go to Giants.com, and Mike's put up, I counted seven or eight, and I'm sure you have a couple more coming still, of just great stuff. And I guess we could start with Eli Manning, and we'll start with the Man of the Year award, because he's up for that, one of three finalists tomorrow, Mike, and he just seems very proud of the fact that he's even in the final three.
Well, that's what he said. He was at a news conference a couple of days ago, and he said, if you're in the final three, you've already won. Eli obviously does a lot of great work off the field and on the field, of course, in the award that combines them. It would be nice, though, if Eli got it, not only for Eli, but frankly for the Giants organization. The award's been given out for 46 years, and no Giants player has ever won it, which
wow.
I find hard
wow.
to believe.
Yeah.
So it's really well past overdue for a Giant to be selected NFL Man of the Year. But Anquan Boldin and Ben Watson, the other two finalists, have also done tremendous work in the community and are also outstanding players. So it'll be interesting.
Well, Mike, you know, no matter who gets the award, like you said, if you're in the final three, you certainly are a winner. Every one of the guys that are nominated, just the stuff that they do in their communities. But, you know, more importantly with Eli, we all know the type, the person that Eli is. He's very humble about things that he does. I know behind the scenes he's done so much stuff that people don't know about, but it is good to see him finally get recognized for the charity work that he does do around the tri-state area and with the New York Giants. So I know from Giants fans and everybody, we wish him the best of luck. And you make sure you tell him that John Schmelk and Jeff Eagles told him that he better get the award. So,
well, but, I'll see him in a couple hours. I'll let him know. You know, the irony is, Eli would probably rather not even be up for the award because
sure.
he doesn't want to he wants to be recognized, I guess, but he doesn't like all the attention he's getting for doing what he does in the community and working with children. He just wants to do it and not be publicized for it.
Well, and I'm sure one thing he also doesn't want to do is, you know, answer a lot of questions about Peyton Manning. I'm sure he's getting a lot of those, too. Everyone assuming,
well, you know he is.
Everyone assuming this is going to be Peyton's final game as an NFL quarterback. Mike, I know, you know, the stock answer everyone gives is, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure. Is the general feel out there, though, that this is going to be Peyton's last game? And what did Eli have to say about watching his brother perhaps go through his last rodeo?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, yes, the overwhelming sentiment here is that this is Peyton Manning's last game. I think if you told 99% of the media here, they would say that they believe that Peyton will suit up for the final time on Sunday. You know, obviously we've talked to Eli about it a few times already, and yesterday I was able to talk with Archie Manning about it as well. And the family is insisting that Peyton hasn't said anything about it, which makes a lot of sense. You know, he's not going to start dwelling on his retirement before he plays his final game. But Archie was asked yesterday, would that be a perfect scenario, Peyton winning the Super Bowl and then walking off into the sunset, I believe was the phrase used. And he said something to the effect of, oh, I'd like to see that. So I'm pretty sure that Peyton has said something to the family, but the family's not revealing anything right now.
Well, Mike, that's why you're out there. You're supposed to dig and get this exclusive information.
Yeah,
come
on. And all the work and interview.
I'll give you something. Peyton and Eli had dinner the other night. Eli picked up the tab.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. That happens all the time. But you know what, though? I will tell you this. You know, no matter what happens with Peyton Manning, you got to understand that this guy has been so good throughout the years. But I think that, you know, this is just a little bit of added pressure. I certainly wouldn't want – I mean, I would want to know if it was my last game that would be in the Super Bowl. But, man, I'll tell you what, going into this game, the pressure he's going to have on himself just to win this and be able – I think that part of him, even though nobody knows what the real answer is, I think part of him wants this to be done. I think he's at the point where his body is just breaking down and just can't handle that stuff anymore. And you know, I just don't. These guys that play till they're 40 years old, and especially at a quarterback position, it's tough. But he's going to have a tough road against them on Sunday, Mike, because this Panthers defense, this team is good, and I have a feeling that they're going to get after him pretty well.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jeff. I think most people here would pick the Panthers, although, you know, like Phil Simms said the other day, the Broncos defense is really one of the best defenses we've seen in a long time. And even though they've gotten a lot of attention after their great performance against New England in the AFC Championship game, the Broncos defense is still really not getting its due.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people believe that the Broncos are going to be in the game right to the end because of that defense.
You know, Mike, you mentioned Phil Simms. You had a chance to catch up with him, or at least you were in a scrum with Phil Simms addressing a lot of the media out there. This is his eighth Super Bowl. It's nearing a record. I know you talked about Eli's legacy, too. What were some of your big takeaways from talking to Phil this week?
Well, actually, one of the most interesting things was something I completely forgot to write about, which was he was asked, you know, whether he thought that Carson Palmer would have a hangover after committing six turnovers in the NFC Championship game. And he said no. He said, you know, you don't line up, you know, you don't get under center the next year and think, oh, my God, I hit four interceptions in the last game. I don't know if I can perform now. He says Carson Palmer is going to go on as he always did and has absolutely no effect on it. And he also said what I thought was interesting, you know, so many questions this week about Peyton's legacy, and you know, which is the last thing Peyton wants to talk about and the last thing Eli wants to answer questions about. But Phil said these questions about Peyton Manning's legacy are ridiculous. As he put it, you know, he's been to the plate 5,000 times already. Now we're going to judge him on one last at-bat.
Great point.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. So, it really doesn't, because, you know, hey, listen, what he's done, and he's his body of work is, in a lot of people's mind, is one of the best to play the game. Mike, you know, we had the news this week of one Justin Tuck announcing his retirement. And what's been is there been any – I know that, you know, it's Super Bowl week, but a lot of ex-players out there, a lot of people that know Justin Tuck. What have you seen or heard around there about Justin these days?
Well, both OC, I talked to both OC and Eli about that. And, you know, I think for them, both of them got pretty emotional, especially OC, who is obviously very close to Justin. And he said he got a call from Justin the other morning and said, I just want to let you know I'm going to retire. And Justin, said he had, you know, very mixed feelings. You know, he's happy for everything that Justin has accomplished in the game on and off the field. He's, you know, obviously Justin's been a tremendous ambassador for the game, great player. But O.C. said he was a little sad because, you know, now all three, Strahan, O.C. and Tuck, are all retired now. And that was kind of the last link for him to, you know, the Super Bowls. And Eli said as soon as he heard, he texted Justin. And just to say, you know, he's very proud of him, and he's a tremendous friend and a great teammate. And, you know, we are in the Bay Area, and he did play his last 2 years in Oakland, and there have been a lot of tributes, Justin Tuck tributes. You know, the newspapers had nice stories, and, you know, the local news. And, you know, he was only here 2 years, but you could tell he made a great impact in just two seasons with the Raiders.
Well, you talk about the Man of the Year Award. You know, I'm surprised Justin never got one of those nominations for all his work he does for Rush for Literacy and all that stuff. And I think his impact off the field, Mike, is really just as big as his impact on the field.
Oh, no question. It's not bigger. And really, his impact is on both coasts because he worked just as hard off the field when he got out here as he did when he was in New York.
All right, Mike, I have a question about a coach that even probably the biggest Giant fans don't really either know or know much about, and that's Al Holcomb. As you know, the three of us were in this building when Al worked here as the defensive quality assistant coach, and then he moved on and became a position coach, and now he's with the Carolina Panthers. Just a great guy. I know you had a chance to catch up with him when I was leaving the locker room when the Giants lost to the Panthers this year. I didn't even see him. He pulled me aside said hello. It was great to see Al, and was it fun catching up with him this week, Mike?
Oh, great. Al Holcomb, as you know, John and Jeff, is just one of the all-time nice guys in the NFL.
He really is.
I mean, just you don't usually describe football coaches like he's just a sweet guy. He really is. And, you know, the thing that really kind of impressed me about him, and I was talking with Dave Gettleman about this, was, you know, Al Holcomb is coaching Luke Kuechly, I always pronounce the name wrong, and Thomas Davis. I mean, two of the very best linebackers in the NFL. And Al, he coached at Lafayette and Kutztown State, and he never played in the NFL. And, you know, players like him, they could kind of say, you know, what are you coaching me for? You know, you never played big college football. But Dave said that Al commands tremendous respect among all the linebackers in that room just because of his knowledge and just the person he is. And they really love being coached by Al Holcomb. He's really done a great job. He came in, as he said, he was almost like a grad assistant on the pro level. And now he's coaching a couple of the best linebackers in the NFL in the Super Bowl.
Well, one part about being a good coach is being able to communicate with your players. And more importantly, commanding their respect, like you had said. And with the two guys that you mentioned, what does Al know about linebacking when coming from those two guys? But you know what? He's just a great guy. He did, you know, he's paid his dues. He was a quality control coach here for the defense and for the Giants. And now he's up there and in a Super Bowl again, trying to get his second ring. The other thing that you had mentioned is Dave Gettleman. I think that a lot of us know the name around here, and we look at what the success he has had with the Panthers over the last couple of years, and certainly he has a roadmap that he has put together. And now this team has gone on a run with the Panthers organization, and he's just right there with them. I got to see him when they came into town, and he's still Dave Gettleman. You know that, and he's never going to change. But one thing he does well, and that's evaluate talent, and he put a fine football team together.
We all love Dave Gettleman. For years, for about the first 10 years I was with the Giants organization, I sat down every week with Dave Gettleman to get my material for my scouting report. Just two thoughts about Dave Gettleman, if I could. The first thing, Paul Schwartz of the New York Post walked up to him at the opening at night the other night when he was available to the media, and Dave saw him and said, "Bubba!" So Dave still calls everybody Bubba. He calls me Bubba. You know, he's just such a great guy. And I think, really, the best thing that Dave did, and, you know, so many people are happy for Dave because you talk about a guy who paid his dues and really had given up the idea that he was ever going to be an NFL GM. But he went to the Panthers, and he did not blow things up. He did not say, "I'm going to change everything. I'm in charge now." You know, he kept the coach, Ron Rivera, You know, he's kept a lot of the players. He is very quick to credit Marty Herney, the previous general manager who was fired during the 2012 season. You know, he points out every chance he gets that Marty Herney left him a lot of good players and a very strong talent base. And Dave has, you know, built off that. And he's been there 3 years, and they've won three division titles, and now they're in the Super Bowl. So so many people, I think, are really happy for Dave Gettleman. You know, personally, it's really tough. You know, I'm like so many other people in America. I would love to see Peyton Manning win and walk off this. I mean, who's been a better ambassador to the NFL than Peyton Manning? But, you know, also as a friend of Dave Gettleman, I would love to see Dave Gettleman win. So maybe they can tie. I don't know.
Yeah, Mike, it's funny. You know, you mentioned Dave, and I was lucky enough for at least 1 or 2 years I was able to go into a couple of those meetings with you when he would break down the opponents. And the metaphors and, you know, names you would use to describe players to me was the best. Like, that guy's a real tire muncher. And you're like, Dave, what the hell are you talking about? But he knew exactly what he meant when he came up with these terms.
My favorite was always so-and-so couldn't play dead in a Western.
and my other thing on Gettleman, Mike, when he was in media day and he spoke, I guess, a couple days ago when the Panthers executive spoke, was he wearing flip-flop shorts and a T-shirt?
No, he wasn't, but he was wearing a sweater vest. And he wasn't in the flip-flops and shorts. He was wearing a sweater vest. But it's funny. I don't know why the Panthers do this, but they like their stock photo that they have of Gettleman in their publications is, you know, him wearing his shorts, you know, almost up to his breastbone, for God's sake.
Oh, boy.
I mean, you know how high Dave wears his shorts.
Yep.
It's just unbelievable. Like, you can't get a better photo of Dave.
Well, on the bright side, a clipboard wasn't sticking out of his waistband, so I guess that is at least step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Mike, we appreciate the time. Final question from us. We know the real reason you go to San Francisco in the Super Bowl every year is the party scene. So what is it, the Maxim party today, and the Playboy party tomorrow for you?
The host committee party was very good, but John, you know, this is San Francisco is my favorite city. I don't need scheduled parties to have a good time here. I've been to some of my favorite places. And yesterday I walked down to AT&T Park and got yet another San Francisco Giants sweatshirt. And I'm looking forward. I'm coming back here with my son in June for a 3-game series against the Dodgers.
I'm surprised you didn't try to gather up as many Giants as possible and try to convince them to play a preseason exhibition game just for you this week.
Well, I thought about it, but I think they're all scattered. Actually, the Giants Fan Fair is next week. I wish I could stay here and go to it.
All right, Mike, we appreciate the time. Enjoy your next couple days. We'll see you back here next week.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
Okay,
Take care, Jeff.
See ya.
That's Michael Eisen. Does a fantastic job on Giants.com. I'm telling you guys, go to Giants.com. Read all stuff this week. You click on the little news tab. All the articles are there. Just some great stuff from San Francisco. Michael's every year. He does a great job.
Listen, when you're on the bus for 50 minutes one way, you've got time to write all kinds of articles.
Wait, did he say 50? I thought he said 50 miles.
Well, think about it. Yeah, it's an hour at least.
It's probably worse.
There's where all
traffic.
His articles are coming from.
Yeah, I mean, you have the games in San Francisco, the stadium. I mean, the stadium's in Santa Clara. Most people are staying in San Francisco. There was media day in San Jose.
They're all over the place. And no doubt that people are probably staying in Oakland, too. I mean, it's just very spread out. Where's the Super Bowl next year? Do you know?
Minnesota, right?
Is it Minnesota?
Is it in the new stadium next year in Minnesota, or is that in 2 years? That might be in 2 years.
Yeah.
Oh, let me look it up. That's something I can actually Google very quickly, I would think.
But, you know, when you think about some of these sites where these Super Bowls are with these new stadiums and stuff, I don't, you know, San Francisco sounds like it's great, but it's,
Houston,
you know,
next year.
It's in Houston.
Houston. I knew that, actually.
All right, well, Houston
My
would.
Fault.
I don't know. I just.
Houston's pretty spread out, too.
Like,
yes. You know, Houston.
Just like Phoenix is spread out.
And Dallas. All those places all those south, you know, where there's a lot of real estate, they tend to spread cities out. Manhattan's an island. They couldn't really spread Manhattan out at all.
No, they just got lucky. Yeah, when you think about a couple years ago, what they had the Super Bowl in New York, and the day after was just like today. Remember,
it was a blizzard.
It was
just
it was
like
ridiculous.
Today. It was about four times worse than today.
I mean, you talk about timing.
Forget it.
Wow. I mean, they're meant to be played in good places. Miami's probably on the docket here soon too. I would imagine. Haven't seen one in Miami in a while, but. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time. You know, this is it. I remember in my Super Bowl in 2007, Friday was a day where you know, all the hoopla and everything that's built up to it, John, everything is like finally, it's the Friday before the game, finally. Because all you want to do is you've seen enough film, you've practiced enough, you just want to go play the game. And I remember Friday was just like a normal day. You know, you get done, and then no media.
Did you guys go to the practice facility that day?
Yes.
And practice?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And even on Saturday, Saturday morning, we did the same thing that we would, you know, that they do here on a Saturday. So it's important just to keep that routine.
What I remember about that Friday. And then we'll get to your calls. We got a few people holding at 201-939-4513. We'll talk Super Bowl throughout the show. Giants, of course, anything you want to talk about, we'll get to it. That was my first year with the team. And I was my primary responsibility when I first got here was producing the radio broadcast.
Right.
I had done it for FAN for 3 or 4 years before I got here. So I was only really starting to do a lot of the web video stuff. So like you said on Friday, players didn't talk to the media. But they did do some stuff specifically, just the Giants, for local media that day. They brought a couple of the players out, and they walked them around. And that year, I had started doing our web feature, our one-on-one interview with Antonio Pierce. And AP came down, and we did a sit-down on, like, the stone ledge overlooking the golf course in the back of the resort. You remember that?
Oh, yeah,
area,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I remember it,
And you had that little dopey little canal that went through there, too.
Yeah.
And we did. That was, like, only the second video report I did with AP, and we did it at the Super Bowl. And for some reason, that Friday, that's what I'll always remember.
That's
Fierce.
You picked a good year to come on to the Giants that year, John.
Or maybe the Giants picked a good year to hire me.
Yeah, exactly. But I do. You know, it's funny. You mentioned that.
They really did it. Trust me.
The back of that hotel is exactly. They had the fence around there. They had the pool over there. It was just, man, what a great time. I can't tell everybody that's watching this or even listening to it how fortunate. I mean, after 20 years in the league, I finally had got to go to a Super Bowl, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
just can't imagine that if I was sitting here retired after 22 years and never being able to say that I was in a Super Bowl game, that would be horrible. So I just can't tell you how happy and how lucky and appreciative I am of having the chance, and not only having the chance to win one. And you know, a lot of things a lot of people don't talk about the Super Bowls 2007, 2011 with the Giants was what happened after. That was so cool. The parade. You got to be kidding me. Okay,
well, those are two moments I will never forget for the rest of my life.
The first thing is, and this may make me look stupid, but I really did not know what the Canyon of Heroes was. You know, growing up out west, I didn't really understand what it was. When people started saying the Canyon of Heroes, I'm like, what? And then as I started to research it and look into it, I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? We're going to be going down the Canyon of Heroes? What did that? I mean,
well, dude, in 2007, I was with the camera crew. We were on the float, I believe, with the offensive line. And you know the offensive
line. That's a good
one. So they were having fun with us. They were messing around. Somehow, I think one of those tapes got lost afterwards and all the chaos. But we had one of them. But that was fun. Then 2011, they put me and Jamie Kyle, who's one of our longtime cameramen. He's been here longer than I have even. And we were on with the DBs.
Oh, so
halfway through the parade, first of all, Prince decided for some reason about an hour in to take off his shirt and start waving it above his head. So that was fun. And then Entrell Roll decides to lead the whole DB crew off the float.
Oh, goodness.
So they jump off, and they just take off down Fifth Avenue.
Oh, my God.
So Jamie and I are like,
here we go.
Let's go. So we're literally sprinting down Fifth Avenue with all the ticker tape coming down, running. I'm holding the big boom microphone. He's got the camera. And we just sprint down the street trying to catch the TVs. And a lot of the videos you see of them walking all arm in arm like this. Not that they would stop to, like, high-five fans. That's why we caught them. And a lot of the video of them, you know, high-fiving fans, walking down the street arm in arm, that's the stuff that we got. And
it's just
– it's surreal. Honestly, when it's happening
– it is.
It's like you don't even believe it's happening. It's like you honestly think you're dreaming it. It's so bizarre.
I remember where my kids were old enough to understand what was going on, you know, so that was great. But I remember we were on the buses going from the facility into the city that day. And my family was with me on the bus, and the Super Bowl trophy is being passed around in the bus.
I remember that.
You know, and I got pictures with my kids holding the Super Bowl trophy in the team bus. I mean, I don't even think they remember that. I can't wait to bring that out one day. But real quickly, I got to tell you the best story of the Super Bowl.
And then we'll take your calls right
other
after that.
Other than the game itself, but we stayed out at this place way out in the middle of nowhere on the Indian Reservation. And so we're getting ready to go to practice one morning, and we're loading up on the buses. And next thing I know, we're seeing all these fire trucks coming into the hotel. fire trucks, there's a couple ambulances. You know, obviously we're seeing there's something has happened here. And we're like, wow, you know. So we get on the bus and we leave. And no more than 5 minutes later, my wife calls me and says, you're never going to believe what happened. I go, oh, my God, are you guys okay? You're not calling because that's – is everything okay? And she said, yeah, everything is fine. Trevor, who was my third son, him and Zach, my youngest one, were jumping on the bed, jumping up and down on the bed.
Oh,
and
no.
One did the old, you know, tackle, and he hit the side of the table and cracked his eye open, blood everywhere.
And that's why the ambulance was there, because of your kids?
All these ambulance, all the fire trucks, everything, my kids.
I had no idea.
And everybody's going, God, man, something must have happened. Look at all these. You know, it's almost like the town I live in, Ridgewood. It's like if a light bulb, if there's you know, the toaster lights on fire, then there's nine. It's a nine alarm fire.
Well, because we were the only people there.
Oh yeah.
So people are like, oh my goodness, did Burst tweak his knee in the shower again?
And
you know, whatever.
We're all sitting there going, oh my God, and hope everything. And then of course it was one of my kids who was, yeah,
that's
unbelievable. So the best part about this is that my son is so afraid of needles, it's ridiculous. So when he was younger, when I used to take him to the dentist to get cavities, and I had to literally hold him down so they could numb his, you know, with the needle. He's deathly afraid of needles.
Well, close his eyes.
No.
Doesn't work?
One day, John. And then you're gonna think of me that day. You're going to be like, yeah, Fiegel's told me that. Just close your eyes until you get smacked in the face, you know. But he's going to have to get stitches.
Oh, boy.
And all my wife can think about is there's no way that I'm holding him down because we're going to have the needle to get, you know, to numb it up. So at that point in time, the only thing we could do was promise him a new cell phone. If he could just sit still.
You should have gotten like Tucko C and Strand to come in and hold him down for you. That would have worked.
And
bring in Freddie Robbins. You could have sat on him.
Lo and behold, I think he was in fifth or sixth grade at the time. And that worked.
Promise. So you got to bribe him.
So
apparently scared only to a certain extent until he gets something shiny and new.
Oh, really? New phone? Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Obviously, the final NFL contest of the year this week with the Super Bowl, so check it out. And then, of course, they do NBA, MLB. I think they do college basketball, too. But make sure you go check that out on DraftKings.com.
You do college basketball.
I don't do any of that stuff on DraftKings, but I do pay attention
but
to college
do,
basketball, yes.
But you do announce some college
yes,
basketball.
Yes, I have a game in Pittsburgh on Monday, and then we have a game in, where are we going, Brooklyn next Thursday, I think, or something.
Well, that'll
like
be
that.
Good.
So we're rocking and rolling. It's good times. Keep All right, everybody. Up. You've been holding. We've
yes.
been yapping. Apologies for that. But
That's
we'll
what
get
we
to
do.
You now. Well, yes, we do. Phil in Westchester, you'll lead us off. Phil, you've been holding the longest. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Phil.
Yeah, how you guys doing? I was wondering, where do you think the Giants are going to go with the first pick of the draft?
Where or who specifically?
Which person do you think they're going to draft?
Phil, they haven't even had the combine yet. They haven't had any workouts yet. The Giants don't even have their draft board even close to being started yet, let alone finished yet. So if anybody tells you at this point that they know what specific player the Giants are going
well,
to pick,
they're out.
They are lying to you. Straight up, bold-faced lying. Nobody knows. Even Jerry Reese doesn't know who the Giants are going to pick.
Mel Kiper Jr. thinks that we're taking Ezekiel Elliott in the first round.
Well, that's great.
You know, that we're not doing.
Phil, it's a guess. And you know what? Frankly, his guess is as good as my guess or Fiegel's guess. I will say this. I think everyone knows the Giants' philosophy with the draft is what?
Who is the best player on that draft board?
Exactly. So I also think that they understand that defense is the biggest need, and they're going to have to improve defensively. So I think if there's a tie or close to a tie, they will probably lean towards the defensive player. I will also tell you they probably will not pick a quarterback with the 10th overall pick in the NFL draft. Other than that, your
sure.
guess is as good as mine.
Who do you think?
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Phil, who do you want?
Who do I want? I need a defensive player. That's what I want.
Okay,
all right.
There you go.
Well, I think there's a good chance you'll get one.
And I think if they do go defense, John, I think it'll be the defensive line. I think they need
I
a
think
pass
that
rusher.
Makes sense.
They got to get back to that giant pass rush that
well,
we
nice
all know about.
A nice linebacker that can blitz and play the run. I'm not going to argue with that either.
I would not argue with that one bit, but you know the history there. It doesn't happen very often. So maybe the best available player that this year might be sitting at number 10, and it is a linebacker. Who knows?
And this year it might be. There actually are a couple linebackers that people really like. Now they're saying the Jalen Smith kid out of Notre Dame might be healthy for the start of the year, so who knows where he's going to get picked.
Right.
And, of course, the Miles Jack kid out of UCLA that people see.
So when you come back from the Combine, which John's going to be going to soon.
Yeah, we'll be there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this year.
I want you to tell me when you come back, a little homework from me.
Oh, okay.
Who you like as the linebacker position. I know you have a couple names out there because when we were going over the draft a couple weeks ago, or last week it was, you throwing out a couple names that I think you're intrigued about. So maybe when you come back, that'll kind of give us an idea, because I think that everybody would like to see the Giants draft a linebacker every once in a while that can actually go out and cover and get after the quarterback and all those good things. So that's your homework, okay, Johnny?
Now,
you like me giving you homework?
I do, actually. And I'm struggling here a little bit because the combine's in a week and a half, right? We're actually leaving not next Tuesday, the Tuesday following. We're going out there, okay? Here's the issue, though. The draft isn't until the beginning of May, end of April. Free agency starts in middle of March.
Right.
So now do I focus my preparation for the next week and a half on the draft, do the combine, then come back and focus on free agency, or I do some free agency first, then do the combine? What
free
do I
agency.
Do? So you want me to do free agency maybe for a couple of
weeks
and
do.
Then go to the draft?
I would familiarize myself with the free agency, and I know you've got some of your stuff here.
Yeah, I do.
But because you're going to be at the combine, you want to know, and you do a great job at knowing a lot
of
these people.
You have to if you go to the combine.
Exactly. So you kind of want to know what you see there
I need to focus on draft pick for the next couple weeks. I do the combine. When I get back from the combine, then I go full in, deep end, head over heels into free agency. Does that sound like a good plan?
I think it's a great plan. And, the combine always intrigued me, even though I never went to it. I thought as a player it would be the time when you, if you train for it enough, then you could make that impact, that maybe you can make yourself a little bit more money by doing well at it. And I think a lot of these kids probably think the same way. It's just such a big business these days. These guys are all training, wherever
They train for the interviews. They train for everything. I mean, forget it.
And that's the truth. They are schooled in every single thing that goes on at the combine.
Danny Salamone, let's go to line two. James in New York. He's up next. James, what's happening, pal?
What's up, James?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, John?
Doing well, James.
Good. What's happening?
Oh, not much. I mean, I just want you guys know I listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. I guess the thing I wanted to talk about was free agency and a little bit of the draft. I'm hoping that in free agency we could kind of get some veterans, because I feel like that's what the team is lacking with these, last-minute losses. I think we had some vets, maybe get, the middle linebacker from Kansas City, or either Eric Weddle.
Derek Johnson.
Derek Johnson or Eric Weddle, Reggie Nelson, I believe his name is.
Yeah, from the Bengals.
Something like that, just to kind of get some vets in, because the team is pretty young. And also, if you look at the free agency, and what's out there, the offense that we have right now, that's probably what it's going to be next season.
Well, James, look, I think Jeff and I both agree with you, and we've talked about this before, that bringing in a veteran safety, we both think is pretty important this year to bring some stability to the middle of that field and that secondary.
Plus, you got a guy in Collins that played a year. He played every game. He learned a lot.
But maybe take a little bit off his plate, though.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. We had a veteran guy that can now say, okay, Rook, you're no longer a Rook anymore.
Right.
You played a year. Now you kind of see how the game has played at the pro level, and they can help him. Because they definitely need some extra help at safety. And the guy from San Diego would be a great addition in my mind. Waddle.
All right. And as far as the draft, the guy, you're asking the last guy, who does he want? I mean, as I was looking at mock drafts, number one, I'm interested in Noah Spence. He's from he was from Ohio, and he got kicked out of school.
Yeah, he went to Ohio State, had to go, I think, Eastern Kentucky. A lot of tools, might be the best pure pass rusher in the draft. Some people have labeled him that. I'll believe that when I see it, after I see what guys like, DeForest Buckner can do and Joey Bosa, guys like that. But there's some off-the-field issues with him, too. So the teams and every team in the NFL has to do all their work on what the issues were off the field that got him kicked out of the Ohio State program.
All right. Or Miles Jack would be, you know, either one or two for me so far. And the last thing I just wanted to say, you know, the reason I really love your show the most, I mean, I remember you guys had Richburg's coach on, right? And he was just talking about everything about Richburg, like, you know, telling us about him, right? And
yeah.
I was like, dang, I hope we get this guy. You know what I mean? And then we got him, and then he was actually exactly what the guy said. So it was, like, kind of cool that you guys, you know, you guys have all these guys. So, you know, that was good.
I appreciate that, James. Thanks so much.
So you like our guests.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Take it easy.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Well,
there you go.
We bring on people to try to get some information to the fans that maybe they don't get elsewhere.
Listen, that was pretty good that you, you know, you brought that guy on, and then lo and behold, here comes Richburg. Nice. Well,
I honestly forgot that we had his head coach on, but I guess we did now that he mentioned it.
You had him on before the draft?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
I think so. Because we were trying to get a feel for, you know, a lot of the offensive line prospects, and he was, you know, one or two, depending on who you talk to, in
yeah.
terms of center. So, decided to make the move. 201-939.
There you go.
4513. Marco in Connecticut is up next on line four. Marco, what's up, pal?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. What's happening?
Oh, everything's good here in Connecticut. We're getting crushed with snow.
Yeah, my son just sent me a picture. He's up in Stores up at UConn, and they're just getting slammed.
Slammed. So,
yeah.
Slammed. But
yeah. Wow.
I just came in the garage, take a break from shoveling to call in. I'm listening. I love this time of the year listening to you guys about the, you know, it brings back a lot of memories, especially with you having you on, Jeff, with Super Bowl 42.
Thank you.
And I was at that parade, actually, and John was talking about the DBs from Super Bowl 46. In 42, I remember where we were. Sam Madison actually jumped off his float and came over next to us, and it was just craziness. It was unreal. What an experience. I'll never forget that.
No, it was amazing. Amazing. Never seen so many people. Never seen so many happy people in New York City.
Yeah, you would get to the intersection and you would see the cross.
Oh my goodness!
And it would just be
this,
people.
Yeah.
You couldn't even see the street. It was just people.
And I
Endless
know that
people.
My neighbors they all took the train in that day, and the kids were taking off school, and it was they said it was just amazing experience for them.
As a fan, I only went to one victory parade, and I cut school in 1996 in high school. I blew off school that day, and I went to the 96 Yankees World Series parade. And that was the only victory parade I've gone to as a fan.
That's great. That's cool. Well, hey, just a little comment on my part, and then I had a few rapid questions for you guys. The Super Bowl, I'm looking at these two teams, and as a Giants fan, I think personally if there was one team that I would want the Giants to replicate, it would be the Panthers. And I like the – I don't know, you know, not really knowing too much of what their salary situation or, like, all their personnel. I just, you know, just an outsider's point of view. They have – it looks like they have a couple, like, really elite players, but then some of them that were drafted recently that are elite, like Josh Norman, you can't count Cam and Luke Kuechly. Those guys are making a lot of money. But just from a salary perspective – some of their elite players have came on and done well for them, and the team is able to make that jump without having to pay so many different players. Now, they will, I'm sure, down the road have to pay them, but that's the window that I was hoping the Giants would get in. And especially this year, if you just think about it, if the offense was able to sneak out a couple games, then you could look at the defense maybe a little differently and say, hey, now we could really build this defense. Unfortunately, wasn't able to happen the way that we would have liked. But I think, you know, get the running game going. Get that pounding running game going. And get maybe another reliable wide receiver to go with Odell Beckham. I mean, look at the wide receivers in Carolina. They lost Kelvin Benjamin. And what they're able to do, Cam is an elite player. But I feel like, hey, we have a few elite players on offense here. With the offensive line coming along the way they are, I mean, I know I'm rambling a little bit, but it's just awesome to watch. And then their defensive line is just there's studs after studs that they were.
Well, Marco, there it is, and you hit it on the head. I think that's where you got to focus here, because when you talk about the Panthers, and you're right, the way you win, and not just in the NFL, you can talk about the NBA too, and all these other teams, these leagues with a hard salary cap, is that it's a huge advantage when you have your great players on their rookie contracts. Because especially now with the way the NFL have their, you know, everything is tiered with the rookies, you know, you don't have to, you know, pay the first round pick a bajillion dollars like you used to. You know, the Panthers right now, you know, spend a lot of money on Cam Newton, Luke Kuechly. You know, Ryan Khalil makes money. Jonathan Stewart makes money. But you know what? Take a look at these guys on their defensive line. Star Lotu Lele, $2.5 million. Shaq Thompson, $2.2 million. Kelvin Benjamin, he didn't play this year, but another good young player, $1.9 million. Devin Funchess, $1.3 million. Kawan Short, $1.1 million. Coney Ealy, $886,000. Kurt Coleman, $1.4 million. I mean, and then I can't even find Josh Norman here. He's still low on this list. Josh Norman, $574,000. I mean, you're talking about some of the best defensive players in the league here, and they're making no money. That's how you're good. When you have guys on their rookie contract combined with veterans that are playing well, think of the Giants in 2011. Victor Cruz making no money. Mario Manningham making no money. Hakeem Nicks making no money. Jason Pierre-Paul making no money. Prince Amukamara making no money. These are guys that aren't taking up a lot of salary cap space but are giving you premium-level play. That's how you win.
Then I agree. And with all this money that supposedly the team has, fill in a few spots. Fill in a few spots with free agency. But draft well. Let's go draft well, and let's hit on undrafted free agents. I mean, that's the key here. Speaking about the draft, I want to ask you specifically about two different draft picks from last year, and then I'll take it off the air.
Yeah.
You guys have talked about a veteran safety to go along with Landon Collins. I heard Paul mention it too a few times. I'm curious about Michael Thompson. I was shocked. I mean, when he was drafted, nobody knew who he was. I went on Twitter. Even these big draft guys that are well known, nobody knew who he was. And Jerry Reese's comments were that they felt his skill set could match up well with Landon Collins. Now, I know he was lost for the year. I'm curious about what you think about him going forward. And I'm really curious about Jeremy Davis. I want to know if it was if he didn't learn the offense well enough, was he in Tom Coughlin's doghouse, especially at the end of the year when guys like Ben Edwards and Miles White are coming up and playing over this draft pick that we obviously, you know, we wasted a pick on him. I want to know what kind of went wrong with him last year.
You know, I think it's a good question Jeremy Davis. And thanks a lot, Marco. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
And we had this conversation. Why didn't Jeremy Davis play end of the year?
Well, it's just
like you'll
agree with me. It happens with all these young players, okay? Number one, there is a learning curve involved in the offense. The other thing is what do the young players have to do?
Play special teams.
Not good at special teams.
Oh, okay.
So
there you go.
That's what's happened. So the other guy is not only...
That's funny because he was a guy coming in that people thought would be a very good special teams player. Didn't do it at UConn, but he was a willing participant. But you're telling me he didn't really adjust
well. Being willing to do it and doing it right are two different things.
Okay.
But, you know, hopefully he's learned and he's going to improve on that and, and kind of move up in the rotation from receiving and that kind of stuff. So,
well, yeah, I agree. It was discouraging that they would activate a guy like Ben Edwards who they picked up off the free agent list instead of him. And that was another reason that I was a little disappointed. They didn't decide to start Bobby Hart in that last game, and they decided to start Dallas Reynolds instead. I'm not quite sure why they did that either. I'd have to look into that and figure that out.
Maybe. One last chance for Dallas Reynolds to maybe get a little more, you know, see what we got from
maybe.
Him.
Maybe. You know. That's possible.
Because I think that Bobby Hart has shown from practices and in the games and things that they saw out of him that they're impressed with, and that's why they drafted him. And, you know, he wasn't an early round draft pick, but he certainly, I think, can have a chance to try to play next year on this offensive line.
And so, in terms of Michael Thompson, I need more information. I don't think we've seen enough. I mean, he was a young guy just getting used to stuff, and now he's going to have to come off an Achilles injury. Who knows how he's going to recover. So I wouldn't go in and say, oh, Michael Thompson could be our starter, because we frankly don't know. We haven't seen enough.
He'll be in the mix.
They'll give him a shot, but I don't think we've seen enough.
Remember when we were in Cincinnati and the buzz that – remember it was that safety combination. We were coming out of Cincinnati. There was like four safety combinations.
They rotated all different guys.
Remember all kinds of them. Mm-hmm. I do remember that he was starting at one point in time. Whether that was just by numbers or not, I don't know. The other thing I will tell you about with him was that Tom Quinn had told me that he was very impressed with his special teams.
Okay.
Very impressed.
Good to know.
So that you could look for him next year, and hopefully he's coming back from that knee injury, and he'll be able to add a little bit of something for this team going forward next year.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. It's as simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. John Schmelk, Jeff Fiegels with you. 201-939-4513. Let's go to, who's been holding longer, Danny? Joe? Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's going on, pal?
What's up, Joe?
Hey, hi, Jeff, John. I guess some good news there on Cruz, ain't there, with his recovery?
Yeah, he said he's 75% physically. That was the quote that I saw the other day. Now, we've heard things like that for the last year. I'm to one, Joe. I tend not to listen to players when they talk about how fast they're healing and how they're doing with injuries. Because as well as players sometimes know their own body, and Jeff can attest to this, I think, players get very excited when they come back from things. And they want to rush.
Especially when you've been out as long as he has.
Absolutely. And I think it's certainly not bad news that Victor said he's getting a lot better and feeling good. It's great news. But it's more important what the doctors say and how he reacts once he goes out there and does stuff on the field. Because remember, he came back and did stuff. It was when he started doing stuff that he had a setback. So let's see what happens when he starts doing stuff.
And I think, Joe, you know, I think the jury is out. I think the biggest question is how is he going to return and at what level? Can he get back to that level that he played at before? Would be awesome. But I think we still have to question that a little bit and see what happens. So.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call, man. Now we're going to go right back out to San Francisco and say what's up to one of our fellow partners here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Anita Marks. And Anita, I know today you're at a professional football women's seminar, if I'm not mistaken. And this week the NFL made some news by declaring that for all executive positions, there is now a Rooney Rule where you have to interview a female candidate. What's going on? How's San Francisco treating you?
Oh, it's fantastic. You're absolutely right. So this is the second day of the Women's Summit. So I just actually exited a panel with Alex Flanagan, Mendoza, of course, who's now part of the ESPN Sunday Night Football broadcast team, and Roger Goodell's wife, who is hosting the panel. So today's the second day. Yesterday was Condoleezza Rice, wow. Billie Jean King. It's really unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, the excitement around this summit is the fact that Roger Goodell came out and said that he's going to implement very similar to the Rooney Rule in regard to women having an opportunity of getting management positions in the NFL. So, and this is the first summit. They're going to plan on having this each and every year moving forward. So it's a celebration of really, you know, female empowerment and having an opportunity and having a voice in the NFL. So it's a very exciting time here.
You know, Anita, not only is it for a position in management, but you think about, we got a full-time female coach for the Bills, Catherine Smith. She became the first full-time female assistant coach in NFL history last
month.
Special
teams quality control.
Yeah, so it's not only in the management position, but we are now seeing it. We saw it with the Arizona Cardinals last year, and now a full-time position with the Bills.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, yesterday, Sarah Thomas, who is the first female NFL rep, she was here yesterday. She spoke to the group. Jen Welter, as we know, who was an interim coach for the Arizona Cardinals during training camp. She was here. So, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like in all levels, which is really exciting. Jamie Tisch is here. I'm actually sitting right next to her. So the Tisch family is here representing the Giants. There are a number of owners of the Buffalo Bills, Dee Haslam, owner of the Cleveland Browns, the Denver Broncos, a lot of female executives. So it's been a fun 2 days here for sure. Besides, of course, all the X's and O's that everybody really wants to talk about. Of course, getting ready for Denver and Carolina.
Well, what a perfect segue. And obviously, we've heard all about the Cam Newton stuff and all that nonsense. Tell me something, Anita, that has not been out there ad nauseum that we're tired of hearing about, that maybe people are talking about out there with this matchup between the Broncos and the Panthers.
I will give you this nugget. I had a very lengthy conversation with Tom Jackson, yesterday, and he sat down. Of course, you know him on Monday NFL Countdown, and the fact that he did play for the Denver Broncos, he's obviously rooting for that team, and he was able to get a one-on-one to sit down with Peyton Manning. Ooh. And a few things that Peyton Manning communicated to him that he shared with me. And number one, Peyton said that he's never felt healthier than he has right now, let's say in the past 2 years. I don't think people realize how unhealthy, especially his foot with the plantar fasciae that he was dealing with, how difficult it was for him to play. And you look at the numbers and you look at the interceptions and you look at the fact that, you know, he had to play out of a shotgun because he couldn't do the drop step and all that. This is the healthiest Peyton Manning has felt in 2 years. So I think, and it's really intriguing because the feeling here with a lot of the analysts, they're using the analogy of the Giants game against the Patriots where everybody, if you recall in Arizona, Feigs, you remember this, nobody was giving the Giants a chance. Nobody. And that's kind of the feeling here when you talk to a lot of the fans, but when you talk to a lot of the analysts who've been covering the Denver Broncos, who've, like, you know, talked to Peyton, who've talked to Von Miller, who've talked to a lot of these guys, they have the number one defense in the NFL, and they've got Peyton Manning, who I think is possibly going to shock the world on Sunday, and I think you're going to see Peyton Manning play vintage Peyton Manning football on Sunday. I'm not sitting here telling you that Denver Broncos are going to win, but a lot of people, I know a lot of fans are expecting, especially me, before I came to San Francisco, I was expecting like just a total blowout. Like I was just hoping it'd be somewhat of a good game so I could still be tuning in the fourth quarter. But guys, I'm in the analysts who know and the analysts who are talking to Kubiak or talking to Peyton, expect a 17-14 game, and who knows who might the winner be.
Mm. Wow. Are you one of those analysts that are expecting a 17-14 game, Anita?
Well, no, like I said, coming into San Francisco, no, I was not. I mean, I was praying for I'm praying for a competitive game.
Yeah.
But in talking to a lot of the insiders who've sat down and have spoken to Peyton and have spoken to a lot of the teammates and spoken to Kubiak and have spoken to Wade Phillips, they do feel that this game is going to be a lot closer than what most people think.
When people talk about this matchup between the Bronco defense and the Panther offense, Anita, how did people seem to think the Broncos are going to try to deal with Cam Newton? Are they going to rush him like they would a normal quarterback? Are they going to more try to contain him? How is that Bronco pass rush going to approach the unique challenge that is Cam Newton?
Yeah, what I'm hearing is they're going to do what they do best.
And they should.
They're not going to not blitz. They're not going to not go after Cam, because I want to say I read a stat that 7 of his touchdown passes came during a blitzing formation from opposing defensive team. But so from what I understand, no, they're not going to change. They're not going to change their identity. They're going to continue to do what they're going to do. But they know the importance is stopping the run. And if they can stop the run and contain the rushing attack for the Carolina Panthers and shut down, this is what I think is really going to be key, is can they shut down Greg Olsen? Because let's face it, guys, no disrespect to that wide receiving core, and I've said this before, you know, from Ted Ginn Jr. to Jericho Cotchery to Devin Funchess, these guys are number 3, number 4 wide receivers on somebody else's roster. Really, the straw that stirs this drink, obviously, is how Cam Newton is able to run the football and throw the football in that dynamic, rushing the football with Jonathan Stewart, who I hear is very healthy, and really Greg Olsen being a big part of that passing attack. So to me, I do believe it does come down to Wade Phillips and what type of defensive schemes that he puts in place, but also can they take Greg Olsen out of the equation? Can they stop the rushing attack? If they do, and again, I mean, how crazy, think about it, how crazy is it that we're sitting here talking about Peyton Manning sneaking up on a team? It's like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I think we forget, right? Like, the dude's in Canton already, regardless of what happens here. I think we're all in agreement there.
Of course.
But, well, it's more reason for him to be.
That's the feeling out here right now, that this is a Denver Broncos team with the number one defense in the NFL, and a healthy, finally healthy Peyton Manning that's sneaking up on the Carolina Panthers. I mean, it's comical in a sense.
More reason for it to be his last game, in my opinion. You know what? If he feels that great, then you know what? He should run off into the sunset, because the way I saw him throw footballs over the last couple of weeks, I hope it's his last game, and I hope he wins. I'm rooting for the Denver Broncos, Anita. The only thing in my mind that's going to keep this Denver Broncos team in the game is if they do not turn the ball over on offense, because Carolina will score quickly on you, even though they have a good defense. Denver does, but they got to eliminate the turnovers. And can Denver stop that running game of the Panthers? I think those are the two most important things for me on the Denver side. Carolina, they Greg Olsen is the guy. So if they're going to put Tlaib on Olsen and see that kind of matchup goes, because you know that Norman doesn't play the slot very much, as we all know. You know what? I want a good game too, just like you do, Anita, and all the analysts and everybody picking here and there. Who knows? So it's just fortunate that if you think about Peyton Manning, if it has to be his last game to be a Super Bowl, you couldn't ask for anything more than that. And so hopefully, I'm rooting for him and the Broncos.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. That was another thing that Peyton Manning mentioned is he knows more than anything. He has to be turnover free.
Yeah,
and correct me if I'm wrong, Schmoke, you probably know the stat better than I do, but I don't think Peyton Manning has one interception, right, in the postseason so far. Like, I don't think he's turned the ball over once so far in the postseason.
I believe that is correct, yes.
My goodness, I just lost my train of thought. There was something
you
else.
You were going to say that could be a bad statistic. If he hasn't had thrown interceptions in two games, look out for this one.
right. But another thing is that, listen, look back in regard to the teams that Peyton Manning has played on. This is another thing. He's never played with such a great defense.
Yep.
And Phoebe, you know this better than John and I.
He wins championships.
When you've got a quarterback that goes into a game who knows he's got like the best defense in the NFL, it's less pressure.
Yep.
Peyton has never been this relaxed, this at ease going into a game, because the pressure isn't all on him. It's not all on the offense to have to perform. It's really on this defense stopping Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. And Peyton Manning really being a game manager.
Well, we all know he's
more than that, especially when he's healthy. That's why I think don't underestimate this Denver team, guys. Don't do it.
Anita, if you see Trent Dilfer, he'll tell you the same thing. Look what happened to him that year that he won the Super Bowl. They had a great defense,
right,
and they did not have to rely on a quarterback, even though it is Peyton Manning. I'm not comparing the two. But it's kind of a very similar situation. So just don't make mistakes on offense and let your defense play well, and that's your formula to win the Super Bowl. There you go. That easy.
Thank you, Anita.
Hey, Anita, have fun out there. Be careful.
All right. You got it, guys.
Have fun rest of your weekend. And now this is when Anita goes into, full party mode. So she's going to have a lot of fun out there over the weekend. All right. We got two guys on the line. I want to get to them before you say goodbye. You got 60 seconds apiece. Let's go Daniel in San Diego first. Daniel, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up, pal?
Hey, Daniel.
Hey, how's it going, Big Blue?
Good,
all right, Dan.
How are you?
Looking forward into the future. Assuming we do not go free agency D-line, what do you guys think about Noah Spence or Kandice at number 10?
I think both guys are kind of in the neighborhood there, to be honest with you. I mentioned with Noah Spence before, a lot of talent. We got to see his off-the-field issues, why he had to get, let go from Ohio State. And, those Ohio State players, always very variable, questionable characters, as Dan Salamone knows very well. And in terms of Ndichi, I have not done a ton of work on him, but I know he is in the conversation there, and they do fit the profile of defensive linemen can be impact players. So, Daniel, I think you're on the right track.
That's the one I'll go with.
Very good. Very good.
Thanks, bud.
We'll definitely get into more of this.
You too.
You too. We'll definitely get into more of this after John gets back from the combine, and we'll be able to tell us a lot more about what's going on there, too.
Chuckles, be quick. You got 30 seconds.
Hello, Charlie.
What's your Super Bowl prediction?
I can't believe you gave more time to Anita than me. But speaking of that, I just wanted to say, Jeff was talking about his Super Bowl experience, and I just want to say that Jeff was one of the main reasons why we won that game.
Thank you.
He had four punts for 156 yards, but two of those punts were inside the 20, and one was a 55-yarder. He kept the field advantage in our favor, and without him, you would have never won that game. You were the MVP of at least the special team. So,
well,
man,
I appreciate
you didn't just go to the game. You actually helped us.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hey, Charlie, I have a question for you. Do you want me to wipe that brown stuff off your nose?
Hey, Charlie, you keep it coming, buddy. I don't care, man. I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
No, it's true. It's
I appreciate
true. Have
it.
Have a great weekend, guys.
You're welcome, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
And have a great weekend, too. So, listen, Charlie's my man. He's up there. He's especially when he makes those comments like that. That's great. So
just kissing your butt.
Who cares? I love it. Yeah.
I didn't realize you were so susceptible to flattery.
Me either. It only happens every once in a while.
All right, give me your Super Bowl breakdown and prediction.
My prediction is the Carolina Panthers will win this game. I think that the score is going to be 30-16. It's not going to be a very good game, in my opinion.
I am going to go.
I don't know why I picked 16, by the way. Maybe for those people that have the numbers, you know, their boxes, maybe the six lines up somewhere in there. I have no idea.
I'm going to go 19-16.
Ooh, wow. Low
Broncos.
Scoring. Interesting.
And we had this debate when the Broncos played the Patriots, and we were on opposite ends of it, too. A lot of it's gut, and this reminds me, and obviously I wasn't around when these Super Bowls happened, but I watched some of the old NFL film stuff. When the Colts were in the Super Bowls, very early on in the 70s, they played Super Bowl III against the Jets, and they played Super Bowl V against the Dallas Cowboys. And in both those games, Johnny Unitas was really at the end. He didn't have a whole lot left. He split time at quarterback in both those games. It was kind of like the sheriff riding off into the sunset.
Okay.
To use the type of metaphors and similes they're using this year with Peyton Manning. And that's what kind of Peyton reminds me of this year. It's
Johnny
one
Unitas.
Last chance, just like Johnny U kind of had at the end of his career. Premier passer, not the same player he used to be. But I think Anita actually did hit a couple things on the head. He doesn't have to win the game himself, and I think he knows that.
You hope he knows that. Because
he's a smart guy.
I know he is.
I hope he doesn't want to try to go out in a 385-yard passing game blaze of glory.
He can't.
Because if he tries to, they're going to lose.
You can't do that.
Because the most important thing Peyton Manning can do is not throw an interception.
Yeah.
Because to me, in that game on Sunday, if the Broncos punt, that's a draw, if not a small victory for them. Because if they play the field position battle, I think they'll have a decent shot. And as great as Cam Newton is, and he's made so much progress as a complete player and a quarterback and a passer over the last couple of years, you know, as we saw against the Cardinals with that one pass he tried to throw down the seam, he will be a little inaccurate from time to time. And I also agree with what the guys are saying out there, according to Anita, that if I'm the Broncos defense, I don't change the way I'm playing. Just because Cam Newton can run doesn't mean you can't pressure him. I want to see DeMarcus Ware come off that edge like a ball of fire. I want to see Von Miller come off the other edge like a lightning bolt. I want to see them try to beat the you-know-what out of Cam Newton. Because the same way you can rattle Tom Brady, you can rattle Cam Newton too. So I'm going to go 19-16 Broncos. I'm probably picking again more with my heart than my head. And I'm with Mike Isaac.
You are.
You know, I want to see Peyton go out with the championship. I think it's a great story. But I also want to see Al Holcomb win. I want to see Dave Gettleman win. I think it'll be a great story. So if the Panthers win, I'll be cool with it. I'll be happy for those guys. It's not going to kill me. But I have a funny feeling the Broncos defense is going to play a special game. I'm going to say 19-16 Broncos, DeMarcus Ware, Super Bowl MVP, with a forced fumble and two sacks.
My mic is out. Can you hear me, Dan? Oh, you can?
Yeah,
oh.
I'm here loud and clear, boss.
Oh, I don't know what happened here. All right, well, that's fine. You go 19-16. I'm going to tell you right now that the Panthers, look at the last two games, they've scored 30 points in the first half.
But a lot of that's because of mistakes by the other teams and turnovers and takeaways.
I'm not saying they're scoring 30 points in the first half, but I'm telling you they're scoring 30 points in the game, and the Broncos do not score, can't even come close to scoring 30 points.
Well, I'll tell you what. If the Panthers get above 24, they win the football game.
You're right, and they will.
And I don't think they will. Well, we'll find out, and Jeff and I will be able to reconvene next week. We'll talk about it, and of course, Big Blue Kickoff Live comes your way on Monday. Enjoy your Super Bowl weekend, everybody. Have fun. Survive the snow. Be safe. We'll see you on Monday. Happy Super Bowl.
He's got through! 35, 30!